Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership. We unlock the power of organizations and teams to overcome tough challenges, seize new opportunities, and turn bold ideas into real-world results through strategic planning, retreats, and team workshops. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Our guest today knows how to start a relationship in a very memorable and significant way. A couple of years ago at a Cause San Diego event, he offered up the big raffle prize of the night, tickets to the Padres. Yours truly was the winner. What a great way to make a memorable first impression. Bill Brennan, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
Bill is a principal and chief revenue officer at CMR Risk and Insurance Services. CMR is an independent risk management and human capital consultant. They work with firms helping them implement risk management and employee improvement performance programs to reduce the cost of financing risk and employee benefit programs. They're a perennial winner of tons of awards, things like Best Place to Work, Inc. 5000's list of the fastest growing private companies, to list a few. Bill, thanks for taking the time to be on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
So I always like a little bit of the backstory. Why did you end up getting in this line of business and why is it meaningful to you?
Yeah, great question. Like most people in insurance, you fall into it. So I was very fortunate. I went to University of San Diego here and a company by the name of Barney & Barney, which was a long kind of established insurance firm in San Diego, was doing some on-campus interviewing. And it's kind of a funny story. I actually missed the signups because I was late or hungover or something in college. But I went ahead and contacted the CEO, a gentleman by the name of Paul Herring.
That's bold.
Just to get an interview anyway. Long story short, got a job as a broker trainee a week out of college. And Paul Herring, that same CEO, was my mentor. And ended up now at year 29 in this business. So I was at Barney & Barney, which subsequently sold to a company called Marsh McLennan for 24 years and then moved to this firm 5 years ago, CMR.
What led to the move?
Great question. So Barney & Barney was a privately held firm with a lot of values that I really believed in that we'll probably segue into later. And Marsh McLennan was a Fortune 500 company, great firm. I learned a lot, but you know, your employee number 78,242.
Right. Yeah.
And it just never felt like the Barney & Barney days I grew up in and CMR. And I knew the partners just from being in the business, it just felt good. It was a smaller company. I felt like I could have a bigger impact there. So I made the move.
Nice. So why do you find this meaningful?
Insurance?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, because sometimes it isn't about the insurance. We've got back to the values and some of the other things that take place in the business, right?
Yeah. I really do love the business. Insurance has a negative connotation, right? Everyone thinks of the life insurance salesman or the Geico commercials. The most rewarding part in my career has just been the ability to help businesses and build deep relationships with people. So that's always driven me. I've never been driven by money or status, but really partnering with clients and helping them is meaningful. And we do that. And I've done that my whole career. And that's always what's driven me. So, you know, even to this day when I still have a book of business, I still handle accounts, but I have a lot of, you know, leadership, ownership, responsibilities. That's still my greatest joy.
So you've transitioned in your role there. Yeah. So now you're the guy kind of running around, waving your hands. Okay, let's go make some things happen.
Exactly.
Which obviously is key to, we're talking about a business that's best place to work and all those kinds of good things. So maybe share everybody a little bit. What do you guys do there? What does CMR do?
As a firm, you know, essentially we're insurance brokers. So we manage insurance programs and risk management for middle market businesses. That includes property, liability, workers' compensation insurance, and employee benefits. What's our size? We're probably around 60, 70 employees now. We're approaching $18 million in revenue. You know, 5 years ago when I got there, we were 25 employees and about $6 million in revenue. Oh, so we've had some growth. Yeah, it's been obviously a collective effort.
It's fun, but hard.
It's very hard. Yeah, growing a small business presents a lot of challenges. So I've grown a lot in that regard and learned a lot. But, you know, I think what makes CMR great is we try to have a family culture. Our value system is based on putting the clients first and our employees first. And we try to make decisions in everything we do. And that's why I think we tend to win some of these awards. People really enjoy working at CMR, and it's kind of all comes down to our private ownership. You know, there's 8 equity owners, and we take lower profit intentionally to invest back in the company. And I think it just creates a really great culture where you can service clients better and create a really happy employee base.
It is a good way to grow the business, right? Happy employees actually show up and give you a little extra than why am I here trading time for money, right?
Exactly. So yeah.
It's kind of funny that we all don't do this, but somehow it gets lost in the shuffle.
Right.
But back to like the growing business, sometimes things just get kind of crazy, right? And it's hard to keep up with it all and things get a little lost in the shuffle. So
very, I mean, between COVID, employment market, and our growth, it's challenging. It's challenging to staff up. It's challenging to get the right people, you know, and I'm trying to create that environment where recruitment and culture brings in those people has been a work in progress.
Exactly. We had Michael Harth from Laz in here. In fact, the podcast we just released, I think number 94, and they got like 20,000 employees. But he's also talking about the changing marketplace that, you know, with technology and all those kinds of good stuff. So they have to go out and hire. But he says, because of our reputation, he goes, we have a great opportunity to hire some of the best that you would never imagine in the parking business. But because of our reputation of people wanting to work there, it's like people want to sign up. So it makes a big difference.
That's where you want to get to as an employer.
So I know you guys have some specific values. Maybe you want to talk to that a little bit. What are they and how do you guys bring those things to life in your business?
Yeah. Well, you know, our values are pretty simple. You know, it's integrity, it's hard work, it's a fun environment and passion. So we really try to hire
an enjoyable.
That's interesting. Yeah, that is different.
Why don't you explain that word?
Yeah, almost what I said earlier. Like we want, candidly, we require people and expect people to work very hard. I mean, we're a performance-based company and it's intense, but at the same time, we want it to be a fun family environment. It started that way. Our founder started it just with him and his main kind of account executive, and they built it slowly over time. And we try to maintain that culture, which I think you can do to a certain level of a company in size, and we're able to do that. So yeah, it's a constant effort to create environment that's fun, whether it's baseball outings or different kind of clubs we create within the company or just constant employee appreciation events and you name it. I mean, happy hours, lunches, we're always constantly trying to do everything we can as owners to make it enjoyable and fun. And the employees fit that role.
It's a little bottom up too, right? I mean, I know just looking at your website, you have the charity committee, you got the events committees, right? I mean, you're asking the employees like, how do we do this, right? It's not you guys going out. We think this is fun, you know, so we're going to do this. It's like, no, what do the employees want to do?
Yeah, we want them engaged.
Yeah.
We want them to be part of the decision-making process in everything we do.
So when you talk about like the charity committee, I mean, what does that look like in your business? And I'm asking these questions so other people can learn from this and say, hey, how do we apply this from our business?
Great question. So historically, CMR's had this committee. It's a volunteer committee that employees can join. And they meet quarterly and we have a budget to give back to the community. So this committee selects different nonprofits or organizations that have needs that we either volunteer or provide money to. So they kind of go through a quarterly process and we make that donation. So a good example is there's a nonprofit we're involved with called Olive Crest. Not sure if you've heard of them. Big foster care, yep. You know, just they do a lot of different kind of high risk children related services. We're doing a backpack drive and giving them money and having all the employees engage, I think, in next week. So we do stuff like that quarterly. And then we took
it's just purely about donations, about how do we get active with these things?
Both. Yeah. It's getting engagement.
I think that's critical. Yeah.
Yeah. And this might be on the agenda later and something I'm pretty passionate about. And what we created was the CMR Community Foundation. So we formally created a foundation this year. So we celebrated our 20th year in business earlier this year. We had a big party on May 1st and kind of launched this foundation. So we're in the process of getting it approved through the IRS. So it'll be a 501c3. And we're funding it. We funded it with a raise and donation of $100,000. And the goal is to create a more formal grant giving committee that the employees join. We have a board that employees will be part of and give out substantial grants every year, $25,000 to $50,000.
Wow.
So, but it's all about giving back, creating that philanthropic culture. So we want employees like that. And then having, you know, structure and avenues for them to get involved. So really excited about it. It's a lot of work and it still is, but it's been probably one of my favorite things.
Yeah. I should put you up with one of our past guests. My wife runs a nonprofit in PB and got a facility, which was pretty dumpy at the time, and she wanted to get it fixed up. And so she got a construction company, Allgaier Construction. which builds affordable housing, right? So they donated time and effort to come and get this place kind of all fixed up. So when people came in, they felt like they were in a nice place, not some dumpy place, right?
Right.
So we got invited to a kind of a going away party. Like there was a transition of ownership or leadership from dad to the son. And so the big gift that they gave to dad was a foundation, right? The Allgaier Foundation and all this give back that they give to like the people in the affordable housing space.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of a cool story and really inspiring. I went to that and they, I got to get these guys on the show because I mean, this is not the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
And it fits into as well, doing the kinds of things that they do, right? They're in construction. So they find ways to bring construction into the party. So right. It's cool stuff. And then they bring all their vendors in as well to be part of this.
Yeah. There's just so many. There's so many benefits of these foundations for business. You know, and candidly, I'm surprised more businesses don't. I mean, it's just, you know, it creates so much employee goodwill. It brings your key relationships together. It's obviously great branding,
right,
and marketing. And then I think it just drives a kind of culture I think most people are striving for.
Right. What do you think the challenge is? What keeps people from making that move? I mean, that's the big question we always have here. You know, the conscious capitalism, B Corps, and all these kinds of things is, how come? I mean, it seems so obvious, right? We say you're talking about employee engagement, how it's all good, but somehow that message somehow falls by the wayside.
I don't know how philosophical I should get, but
go for it, Bill.
You say conscious capitalism. If you take away the word conscious, capitalism is all about the profit motive.
Right, the bottom line.
The bottom line. And I think most businesses and most successful business people work to that end. Nothing wrong with it. That's your choice. I just have never subscribed to that. And I think people that maybe are more big picture thinking and not as profit motivated can kind of take that approach. So I guess my short answer is I think it in some ways giving back or taking less profit is in direct contradiction to the capitalist ideals.
Right, right. That is a challenge for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that would be my guess. And it's hard. It's hard work. I mean, it's
right.
I don't know how many hours I spent creating. We did. I mean, it was a full team of, you know, there's lawyers and consultants and actuarial and forensic and bylaws. And, you know, it's a lot. And then once you create it, there's an annual kind of funding and fundraising and board. So it's work. It's a lot of work.
Right. I mean, you have to have a passion. You have to have a desire, right? That you believe there's a great value in doing this.
Right.
I mean, there is the business part that comes out of that, but some level it's got to be about you, the person that says
that's just an unintended benefit.
Exactly.
The business part.
Exactly. Well, I think part of it too is sometimes just education. People don't know what it takes to make it happen. So they just don't even get started.
Right.
It sounds daunting. So, you know, let's not go there. We've got other things, fish to fry around right here.
Yeah. And I'm a recipient of experiencing it. Barney & Barney, where I started, had a foundation.
So, okay.
You know, wasn't
you saw it in action.
I saw it in action. So it was no great mystery to me, so also easier for me to do. But like you said, I learned quickly how much work it was.
Right.
You know, I participated in the foundation there after it was established. So creating it from scratch was...
But you saw the value. So as an employee coming in, not being part of senior management, whatever, you come in, you go, oh man, I can see the value of this. So, you know, that's how the seed gets set.
Exactly.
So you're setting seeds right now.
Yep.
Who knows what's going to come out of this.
Replanting the seeds I took from my prior life.
Exactly. To that point, I mean, I know in your private life, you're very engaged in the community as well. So maybe talk about that a little bit as well.
Yeah. I was thinking about that driving up here, you know, why I've always had this philanthropic kind of mindset. And for some reason, just, I don't know, or the environment I grew up in, my family, my parents, just giving was always just a non-negotiable kind of activity you did. So it's always been just part of my DNA. You know, I think I heard something young, you know, and I don't know who said it, but a life worth giving is a life worth living. So I've always kind of subscribed to that. Not that I'm some altruistic, perfect, you know, hard worker, certainly business minded, but it's just always been a part of me. So, you
just
know,
like Barney & Barney, you saw it in your parents.
Yeah,
right?
So it just was always there. And then,
DNA.
You know, I went USD where I went has that kind of culture as well, right? It's, I think even now they have they call it change makers is a philosophy there where they're trying to create students that are changing the world, not just high income earners or winning prizes. It's like they want them to, so it just, that's just all I've ever known. And then I rewind to Barney & Barney and Paul Herring, who I referenced earlier and probably reference him again, who was my mentor and one of my best friends. That's what he did. Like I only saw him do that. He was on boards and volunteering his time and rallying troops around nonprofits. So I just probably got on my first board within 3 years of, or a committee or something, just where I was giving back. So,
right.
You know, it's brought me to education, to homeless, to Better Business Bureau type, you know, organizations and everything in between.
So any specific things that you're working on today? Are you still part of Big Brothers or?
Yeah, Big Brothers. I've been on that board now for 20 years.
There's the good news. It's tough to get fired.
Right? Yeah, I can't seem to, but I'm very passionate about that. And then I've also taken on a role at USD to raise money for kind of a campaign that they're running. So those are my two bigger projects. We do have a lot of nonprofit clients. So I feel like I'm consistently engaged.
There you go.
There too, in terms of helping with fundraisers and donating money and time and rallying troops. So
but that's another great example of right where you're at. There's opportunities to do some things, right? Bring your current skill set to some nonprofits in the marketplace and make that happen.
Exactly.
I know you're a big supporter of the Cause Conference as well. So maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's been one of the better conferences I've ever been to, just almost like you talked about conscious capitalism. I hadn't heard of that term or thought about it till the Cause Conference, and it resonated with me. You know, why not? Why can't you be a for-profit organization and make a big impact and give back, right? It kind of comes back to your question earlier, like that might mean less profit, putting resources somewhere else, but you know, anything for the greater good just feels better to me.
Right, right. But there's a lot of data that says it actually comes back in the bigger financially. It actually is a win for you.
I believe that too.
But you have to kind of believe it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's part of the back to this part where we want to be able, if I do X, I should get Y, right? In some sort of financial model. Right. And the idea of like, oh, I'm going to do something special for my employees. How do I know that's going to come back, right? There's that stress, like, how do I know?
Right.
Well, you just have to kind of believe it.
Yeah, it's a leap of faith and you can't.
Yeah, would it work on me? You know, like would I like that, you know?
Right, right. It's hard to quantify.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just get like a direct line of return on investment. And I think a lot of folks want that. And maybe in today's world where everything's now, it's even harder. You just have to have that, that just general belief.
The companies they assess and look at the bigger picture and say the outcomes, it tells a good story. So again, it seems like it's intuitive, but it does come with like a little bit of a, you have to just believe if you're doing something good, it's going to come back in some way, maybe in the next lifetime. I don't know.
Well, it's also a long term, right? I mean,
you can't do one off.
You invest in your community over time. It's, you know, I've had scenarios where people thank me or come back in my life and they've helped me or they've helped my company. And it's because of something I did 10 years ago. And it's beautiful having those scenarios happen, right? Where you help somebody or they help you because of a common cause-driven volunteer activity.
Right, right. So you're a San Diego guy, been San Diego guy for a long time doing business here. What's your thoughts about San Diego? What's our opportunities here?
I was born and raised in San Francisco.
Made the move, huh?
Yeah, and I came here to college, but you know, I've been here
never left
twice as long as I was there. So I'm definitely a San Diego guy. I love our city. You know, I've traveled a lot in my life and I always say, I don't think there's another place I would ever want to live. But do I think we could be better as an economy? Absolutely. Like, I think we missed the boat with, I mean, all California politics are challenging. I think downtown it could be so much better. You know, I think it sometimes baffles me that we're not more vibrant, but it's just a beautiful place to live. And I think that's part of our culture too, is we're more laid back maybe and not as, I don't know. But do I think the sky's the limit for our city? I do. I think we have kind of, we check every box.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of thing talked about on this podcast before is the idea of, you know, kind of a little bit of an island of sorts. I mean, you got an ocean, you got a border, you got the Marine base, you got the desert. We got I think we're like the 8th largest city in America, right? I mean, that's a big city.
Right.
So we got all this stuff and we're kind of our own little community, right? I mean, pretty much everyone knows kind of each other around here. So it just seems like we could be this excellent model for the future, what things could look like.
I completely agree. You know, I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we can't quite move.
Yeah.
You know, my big complaint is, what's the vision? We see like a lot of problems and we hear like a lot of solutions. And I hear, you know, America's finest city, whatever. What does that mean, right? What are you calling me to?
Right.
That's what I keep looking for. Who can, you know, cast a picture that says, if we all got lined up, you know, start collaborating, talking to each other, we could achieve that over there. But I'm not sure. You're not going to get from the politicians, right? They're just, you know, the next election or whatever.
Right.
Business
right.
is not going to do it.
Yeah, there just hasn't been like a movement of leadership internally. And that would drive the politicians, right? And
So,
I mean, yeah, maybe there's just no.
All right, Bill.
Yeah.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Right. Yeah, funny you say that. I've always thought after the insurance is over to definitely get involved in nonprofits and maybe some policy type making. I would never want to be a politician, but, and maybe that's part of it, right? The talented people or the cause-driven people are not going to, I don't believe they get into politics typically. Maybe they start that way, but then the system makes it impossible.
The system is very difficult. Yeah. I think often people go to politics with the right mindset and then you get in and go, okay, here's how it works. You know, if I want to get reelected, here's how it
works. Here's what I have to do.
And here's what I got
to
do. And
you're answering to certain constituents instead of the greater good.
Exactly.
Which is challenging.
Yeah, not easy. So what else do you want to talk about here? What else you got going on that's key in your life?
Good question. You know, I think it's turning 53 this year. I've done a lot business-wise, you know, trying to think about what's next. And, you know, how do I have a greater impact? So I'm always constantly thinking that, you know, what's highest and best use time. I don't have any answers for you.
You going through any processes to try and make that happen?
Yeah, I'm thinking constantly.
Help me out here because I'm always asking that same question.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. Me and a banker and a lawyer I'm very close to, similar age, we try to meet monthly. Mm. And we're doing just that. We're trying to kind of map out, like, what is a perfect day, month, year look like, and what activities bring you the most energy and joy. And I'm trying to figure that out and align my decision-making and behaviors with that. So not there yet, learning and just being strategic and intentional about it, but it sounds.
I love the idea that you're sitting down with a couple of, you know, compadres and having that conversation. I think it's hard to do by yourself.
It is. And we hold each other accountable and we challenge each other and you kind of can work through the BS in your own head, you know, like, why do you keep doing the same activity even though you say you don't want to do it? Right. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty locked into CMR for the next probably call it 5 to 7 years, but yeah, it's what's next, which is almost like the whole regenesis we're talking is I'd like to make just a bigger impact that helps people next. So what that is, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Conversation I'm always having myself. Yeah. What's next? I was having it this morning. Kind of funny though. There's kind of weird things. I'll share this kind of odd story. So I'm addicted to all these various tests you take, you know, about your personality, your strengths, all those kinds of good stuff. I'm always amazed. Like, how the hell do they know these things? Right. So one of the things tool that I'm kind of a fan of is the Enneagram. Are you familiar with that at all?
Very.
So I'm a number 8 and part of our thing is lust, right? So lust sounds like sexual or something, but it's lust for lust for life, right?
Right.
So I'm like going, yeah, what do I got going on that's like lustful that I'm excited about? Kind of weird. Next week, I got an event I'm facilitating all day long with one of my clients. So I'm preparing for that. And so I'm making these cool little name tags, right? With their strength finders and their working genius and all this thing, right? It's like this little science project. And I had a clock ticking because I had to go to an event last night. So the pressure was on to get these things put together right on time. And it was like, I realized that was like a lustful moment, right? All of a sudden, me against the clock, as simple as that, all of a sudden turned like a, what would be kind of a mundane exercise for me into like, all right, we're at a battle here. We got to get something done. So it's kind of weird, the little things that make the difference. I'm always
amazed. And it fills you up.
I got it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Although I only had three sheets, right? Of course, I screwed up one of them. So I had to order more paper, but I got all the designs complete. I just have to hit print now. So anyways, it's kind of the weird, stupid stuff in life that makes the difference.
It does. And you want to make sure you're engaging in those,
right? And recognizing and knowing it, right?
Right, right.
I'm a big fan of you really have to figure out who you are. No one else is going to come figure it out for you, right?
Yeah. I feel like it'd get easier as you get older, but I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Maybe that you realize how much you don't know and then you get confused. I'm not sure.
So you're a fan of the Enneagram? What number are you?
It's been a minute. I feel like I was a 3.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
A performer.
I think so. Yeah. But I wonder what I took the test now. Like, I don't know about you, but the personality test I took in my 20s and 30s, it's very different now.
Well, they claim you kind of are who you are, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
I mean, I've always floated between a couple, but maybe less driven, more.
3s and 8s have a way of getting kind of wrapped around each other, I think, at some level. Yeah. Everybody's going, what the hell are these guys talking about?
Right.
It's kind of a cool tool, though. So
it's a great tool. I think it's my favorite, and it's pretty ancient, right? It's
not. Oh, yeah. It's like some old thing that hit psychology back in like the 50s or something.
Right.
Basically, it fleshes out what your ego is.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's the most accurate of all that I've taken.
Yeah. It's reading your tea leaves. I mean, it takes some work.
Right.
And sometimes I think it's a challenge to actually land on what your number is. But if you figure it out, it's like, yeah. And then there's a whole guide like, okay, if you're one of these, here's the kinds of things you should be thinking about and doing to try and correct the ship a little bit. Yeah. And it's moving, you know, like you go from here to here in the whole Enneagram, depending on where you are during the day. So yeah. Anyways, so check it out, folks.
Good reminder. Yeah. Everybody should check it out.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of all those kinds of tools. So what's the future of the business? Where are you guys going with that? What's next? Obviously on the growth path, but
yeah, we have very strategic goals, 3 and 5 year goals and 10 year goals. So, you know, it's obviously revenue driven. I would say just our conservative budget process is a 10% growth model. We've blown through that over the last decade, really, and particularly the last 3 or 4 years. You know, we've averaged 15 to 20%. which I don't know how long that's sustainable, but that's just kind of a straight growth. But then we have, you know, we have more organic kind of goals, you know, bringing on one or two more owners or even more than that, continuing to win best practices awards, continuing to have metrics that enforce the culture we want in terms of fun and enjoyable, like we talked about earlier in the conversation. And yeah, just ultimately becoming the, you know, one of the better insurance brokers in the country based on all that, not based on profit or revenue.
Just being big is not the goal. It's like, we want to be big and good.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. We're not, we won't grow at all just to grow.
You said there was 8 partners in this?
Correct.
So how do you guys pull it together? How does that, I mean, that's a lot of heads, right? So how do you guys facilitate through that process to all stay on the same page? And have you guys kind of looked at, Joe's good at this, Harry's good at this, Susie's good at this? I mean, how do you guys operate? That's always a key question. Like, how's a senior team actually work together?
Great question. You know, when I got to CMR, there were 5 partners. I was the newest. And it was just that. It was kind of chaotic, right? There's too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing. So we've hired different management consultants and ultimately gone to the EOS model,
okay,
which a lot of Better Business Bureau and EO folks will know. And it's getting right people in the right seat. So we've done a really good job of that and making sure the different partners are in seats that are best for them and the organization. So there's just the structure of that. That was, let me tell you, it was clunky and it was hard and we made a lot of errors, but I think we're in a really good place now. And we have kind of a more formal leadership structure. So sales guys like me are not doing ops and ops people are not doing sale, you know, so it's
always the challenge, roles and responsibilities.
Right. So we've done a good job, but at the end of the day, we will not bring a partner in that doesn't fit our culture. We're a collaborative culture and it's all about the team and organization, and probably why the foundation makes so much sense for us. Like, we're just not money driven. It's community driven, and we all want to see the younger partners and younger staff members do really well. And if you're not like that, if you don't have that kind of personality trait, CMR is not a good place for you.
Right.
My prior employer was a very, very good company, very performance driven, you know, public company, quarterly earnings. And I mean, there were some incredible people there, and that what they would do was just, their performance was mind blowing to me, but I just never fit because I don't think that way. It's not all about my personal gain. And I don't want that to sound negative because there's really amazing people at these big companies, and it's just, we're not built that way.
It's not the team. It's not the collaboration.
We're very team collaboration focused. And so if you're not like, you don't fit, and we wouldn't even hire you if you're like that,
you know,
even though you could bring, if somebody could bring in and double our revenue, if they're not a fit,
right,
we wouldn't hire them. We don't care. We don't want the money over the culture.
Yeah. So often that high performer has a big wake behind them, right? It's like, you know, yeah, great producer, but it comes with a lot of unintended consequences with it.
That is often in my experience.
Yes, exactly. So you're on the sales side of things. So how do you hire? Everybody's looking for that great sales guy, right? So they can have 20% growth.
So there's a whole cottage industry within insurance on hiring the right salespeople. So if anybody can figure that out perfectly, you know,
it could be your next business.
Then you would never work again because there's, you know, the failure rate, like most professional services jobs, is high. You know, I think industry wide, it's 70-80% or something like that. It's really hard to make it. And certainly when I came in and I took that rollover, I think I had 100% failure rate in my first 3 or 4.
We got to try some
first
stuff.
2 or 3 years. So we've definitely kind of created a salespeople in our industry are called producers. So I may use that term producer, but okay, we had a producer kind of personality template that we've created. That producer has to kind of check some personality tests.
Okay. So you do some pre-screening?
Yep. Kind of some personality tests, some experience. And then they have to kind of have the cultural fit. And we've held pretty true to that over the last 24 months and we're doing really well. So, you know, I want to say I'm 5.5 years in. I would say the first class of producers we hired, none of them made it. The second class that we've hired, all of them are thriving.
Ah.
So we've kind of went from one extreme to the other, but
that's a good start itself, Bill.
But it's pretty cool. And we, full candor, you know, I took what I had learned at my prior organization and hired based on that.
The performance metrics.
Right. Right. And it didn't fit. It didn't work at CMR. So we had to step back and say, let's look at the people that have done well here and our culture and mimic it. Like, why are we trying to put the square peg in the round hole. And that's right. what we were doing. So now we're just very strategic. And kind of like you alluded to, or the guest you had on last week, people want to work for us now. We're begging
people.
They're
coming to you. Right?
They're coming to us and we're rejecting them because it's like such a good place to work and the training and mentoring. And I guess that's the last piece is we mentor. We're super strategic and process driven on how we mentor because you have to have that in our business because it's just, you know, you're coming at 24 years old, you know, so somebody that's doing $100 million in revenue is not going to give their insurance program to a 24-year-old. They're not going to put that. Same with the financial planner, right? Are you going right. to put your financial security in somebody that's 2 years out of college? Probably not. So we have to have that mentorship and training and assistance. And I don't know if most brokers in the country do a great job at it. Barney and Barney did. That's how I came up and kind of.
So you're marrying a senior person with kind of the junior person and yep. evolving them through yeah. to the point that the client feels comfortable. Right. With it. Okay.
Yeah, they exactly.
Gotta have at least one gray hair before.
Right. And the client only sees the team. Like, but it comes down to the culture, right? It's a lot of work for the mentor. They make less money.
Right. So they kind of sharing.
They make
model.
Less money in that initial transaction, but obviously long-term. The growth of the firm and the wealth building that comes with that.
So again, it's a belief yeah. thing again, Bill.
It's 100%. It's kind of faith.
Yeah.
You do these things and you'll be successful.
Can you share what the tool is you use for pre-screening? The personalities or whatever? Do you do strength finders?
We do strength finders now. We do have a sales.
Something specific for that.
Yeah, Asher sales testing. They changed the name of it and I'm blanking on it. But what we've done there too is every person that's taken the test, including the existing producers and partners, we have them all listed and where they fell. So we're even strategic about that. Like there's certain zones. If they fall in that zone on the test, we're just not going to move forward. Because no one's made it.
We know that's not a good, right. good fit.
But then there's other, you know, there's obviously the folks that test really high from a pure hunter sales. And there's people that are maybe don't test as high, but that are very successful. So you can't, you know, you got to be careful.
Black and white. Yeah.
You got to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's about how you use your tools, right?
Right. But it was eye-opening when we kind of compared everybody. Some of the lowest performing producers, salespeople we hired had almost identical scores. So we were like, whoa, maybe we should have paid a little more attention.
We got some data here.
Yeah, it was pretty meaningful and it's getting better because there's a bigger population of participants.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited next week. I'm trying to glue two things together. So I'm a big fan of strength finders. So this client, we've done the whole strength finders piece and it's like one of these things you do and everybody goes, okay, that's great, but hard to actually get some action out of it. So then the big boss came across Working Genius. Are you familiar with that? So it's kind of like these six different areas. It's more of a team idea. They've always got two working geniuses, two things that they can do. And then they got two things they shouldn't be doing. So okay. It's kind of some levels, a bit of a summary idea of the strength finders, but also kind of really around kind of team, the working, role you play in a team.
Working genius is what they're like just gifted at.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's just like strengths. You kind of gifted certain things. You just know how to do certain things. Yeah. Right.
Right.
So I'm trying to marry the two of them together. So it's kind of interesting. The little cards I was making, I'm going through everybody's strengths and they're working genius. And I'm like, okay, that makes some sense.
Line up.
Yeah, they kind of line up. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So my goal is how do we actually bring this to life in the organization? I said, this is cool and interesting, but how do we bring it to life? So That's part of my job next week here to pull that out of the team. What are we going to do with this?
Yeah, here's the information. How do we maximize it?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. How are we going to use this thing so we actually get the right people working in the right spot at the right time? So People are energized and excited to be here. So, yeah. Right. But some of the people, like their head sales guy, man, he was like, oh yeah, you would be one of those two things, right? That makes complete sense right. on his personality and how he goes about things. So, well, awesome. I always like to ask, we've got to put a little bow on this, Bill. I always like to ask the question, what's the big idea? So if no one remembered anything out of this conversation except this one thing, what would you like people to remember?
I think just my biggest enjoyment and I would say value I've gotten in my career is just the giving back to the community. However that looks for you is just, it's been, I've gotten more out of it certainly than the community has. So I think that if I was going to, any takeaway from my experience is the engagement and giving and community involvement has just, the return I've gotten personally and professionally, spiritually, emotionally has just been exponential. I'm leaning more into it now in my career more than I ever have in life in general. I teach my girls that. Not good at many things, not really anything, but if I could say I've done one thing right in my career, it's just that it's just the relationships I've built and the rewards that have come from it have just been far exceeded anything I've given. That's for sure.
Jump in and give it a try. See how it works, right?
Exactly.
I think we got 15,000 nonprofits here in San Diego. So there's somebody out there looking for you. So give it a try.
Right.
Or come to the Cause Conference. Another great place to check out the nonprofits here. Yeah, for sure.
I agree.
Well, Bill, I appreciate what you're doing. Appreciate you coming in today. I know you're a busy guy. Thanks for those Padres tickets back in the day. I got to take my boys.
I'll give you some more anytime you want them.
They're Dodger fans. And so we went to a Padres Dodgers game. So it worked out great. It was a whole family affair. So appreciate that.
I remember that. Yeah.
But really appreciate the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you.
So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanta from Jailbreak Leadership saying, till next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.